Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 11th. I'm John Gibson, and with me, sitting back in his, what is that, an easy chair? Jim Allen, how you doing, bud?
Well, we don't want to have too much information. We'll just leave it that I'm Jim Allen. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. What's up?
A lazy boy? A bed?
Just,
a love seat?
Just get on with it. What is this? What is this? What's your furniture? You know, it's like instead of what's my line, it's what's my furniture. Get on, let's move on, man.
Okay.
Well, man, get off the sofa.
I'm glad you look relaxed. All right. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Jordan Noberto of the Chunichi Dragons, and we're going to talk about the Dragons, the CL and PL races, and a whole bunch more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So first-year left-hander Jordan Noberto with the Dragons. I went out and spoke with him on June 29th at Tokyo Dome before the Dragons played the Giants that night. Now, he's from the Dominican Republic, and on Friday, it seemed like he was from someplace that Coco Ballantyne really didn't like because he hit him with a pitch, and Coco didn't seem to understand why he had to take a pitch off the side. Uh-huh. And ended up throwing his helmet at Jordan and got ejected from the game. And so he just wanted a piece of Jordan Noberto that night. So Jordan's coming off of Tommy John surgery in 2013. Mm-hmm. He pitched with the Tampa Bay Rays in the big leagues. And he's really been a treat for the Dragons at mm-hmm. 5-3 with an ERA just over 3. And he said he ended up with the Dragons because after he was coming off the surgery, he didn't feel like he was throwing very well. And then with the Rays, they didn't give him much of a chance. And as we know, Shige Kazumori of the Dragons goes down to the Dominican Republic each winter.
Each winter.
And takes some of his pitchers down there to work in winter ball. And he also basically scouts some of the Dominican players and decided to bring Jordan back with him this year. And Jordan wasn't in the rotation at the outset, but he worked his way into being a mainstay on the mound. And I talked to him a couple times and I said, hey, you know, your English is pretty good. Let's get you on the show. And he said, sure, let's do it. So, sorry, we've had a number of Dragons players on this year. This will be the third, mm-hmm. the second pitcher. And Jordan really works hard. I saw him. I caught him on an off day, but he really spent a lot of time. And most of the time you see the pitchers go in the outfield and do their work and cruise back to the dugout. And, you know, it's a day off. They're not pitching, so they're not moving that much. They're not wasting too much energy. But Jordan really works hard. I've not really seen a guy work that hard. And he actually threw a bullpen that day, too. So let's hear what the hardworking Jordan Noberto has to say. All right, our guest this week is Jordan Noberto of the Chunichi Dragons. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, you, at the beginning of the season, you went down sometimes and came up and went down and came up. What was that like?
For me, it was okay because we have eight guys now.
I don't know how many guys you got.
Yeah, we got eight guys in the farm, and everybody was doing okay, and I see the opportunity for everybody, and you know, I don't have any complaint with that because they have to move us. Like today, they put Valdez in the roster and they take Hernandez out. Mm. They've been doing it the whole year. I'm okay with that. I have no problem with that.
Now, the first time I saw you, you said, man, I hadn't pitched, you know, in 13 days. How do you stay sharp not pitching for 13 days?
It's hard, you know, to stay sharp, but we throw a lot of bullpen here, like, you know that, and I try to keep myself in good shape and try to keep throwing, you know. It's not the same when you come back and pitching, but, like, at least you have to go out there and compete.
And you're throwing against these guys who have really good bat control. How do you get them out?
because like I told you, I throw a lot of bullpens and I go, like, game intensity. I throw hard in the bullpen and I try to keep myself in shape.
All right, now how have you been able to improve your performance? Because you came here and at the beginning, you weren't pitching like you are now, and you seem to be finding a good groove right now.
I have a lot of help from Mori-san and Coach Kondo-san. They've been working a lot with me, like, mechanical way. They've been helping me a lot, like, to use my leg, use the stability, like, get ahead on the count. And I've been improving really well because, you know, I've been working hard. Here you have to work hard and you have to do the best because, you know, they really, like, how you say that, like, the
preparation?
Yeah, the preparation is very different to the state. Like,
very intense.
Yeah, very intense. And that been helped me a lot.
Now, when you go to the farm, what do you work on when you don't pitch, you're not pitching on the first team?
When they send me down there, I don't pitch down there. I just went down to prepare myself for the next outing. I try to throw two bullpens if I had 10 days. Two bullpens and try to get ready for the next outing. The first bullpen, I throw like 25 to 30 pitches. Second bullpen, 35 to 40 pitches.
So more preparation.
Yeah, more preparation, yes.
All right, now, you were talking about the rotation. Who is in the rotation? We don't know. I mean, we know about Valdez. We know Ono came back. He pitched really well night.
Yeah, we got a Wakamatsu. We got Ono-san. We got Yoshimi. We got Valdez, me. And Nate, I was here, but he's helping. That's about it. We only have five guys, and they rotate the guys on time. They push you on Saturday. Sometimes they push you on Friday. Well, they know what they're doing, I guess.
But the team is still competing really well. And you guys, the bullpen at the beginning of the season, the bullpen didn't seem like it was going to be good this year. And now all of a sudden, they're better. What changed in the bullpen?
They make a lot of change. You know, they send a couple guys down and they call a couple guys up. And they put Tajima to close. He's been doing really well and he's been impressed. Like, we got a like, good bullpen now. And that's about it. They just make a move and... They sent a couple guys down and they called a couple guys off.
Now, what impressed you about Tajima?
He's nasty, man. When he misses down the strike zone. He don't leave a lot of pitch up. Like, he got a good two-seam, good flop ball, and good breaking pitch.
Yeah, he's been getting the job done. Now, the Carp are in first place as we speak right now, but all the other five teams have 33 wins. So... how do you get separation and try to get into second place when everybody's about the same?
I guess we have to win like a couple games in a row, and you know a couple teams they had to lose a couple games in a row. But like the competition right now is really good, and we just have to keep fighting, and, you know, keep battling until the end and see what happens.
Yeah. Okay. Now your shortstop Naomichi Donoue, he's been making some really good plays. How have you seen any change in him since the beginning of the season? Because at the beginning of the season, he was not the starting shortstop.
Yeah, he wasn't. Like, he was playing third, he playing second sometimes. But right now, he's playing every day. I guess that helped him, and he's been doing really well. Like with the bat too. Like he's been doing okay. Well, he's been making a lot of good plays.
Tetsuto Yamada of the Yakult Swallows. The guy is crazy good. How do you go about trying to pitch to him?
Like I say the other day in the newspaper, like, that's the best hitter that I face in Japan. He had no weakness. Like, he just go out there and, you know, he look for one pitch. If you go inside, he's going to hack it. If you throw away, if you have to throw a strike because he don't swing a lot of bad pitches. For me, he's one of the best hitters that I ever faced.
So how do you try to attack him?
I mean, just try to get ahead on the count and, you know, try to get him out. Like, make a good pitch, like, low in the strike zone.
You make it sound easy. I don't think it's so easy.
It's not easy, but, like, you know, if you make a good pitch down the strike zone, you can get him out. But, like, he's a really good hitter. I give him the credit.
All right. Now, including myself, a lot of people picked the Dragons to finish last this year. And you guys are doing okay. But still, it's a long way to go. So... where can this team improve? What area?
The area that we can improve is in the offense. Like, sometimes we score a lot of runs, sometimes we don't. But, like, I think right now the team come together more, and, like, we've been doing better and better. I think we're getting better. That's good for the team because we're making improvement for good.
All right, last question. I know the Swallows, they put really good at-bats. They walk a lot. And obviously the Carp score a lot of runs, but what about these CL lineups in the Central League? How do you go about trying to keep them under control?
I mean, they in the Central League, like, they're more like free-swinging guys. Like, in this side, like, they more contact hitter. Like, I think we do better against them. Like, we do okay in the time that we play with them.
So how do you try to get through, like, I mean, when you face the Swallows and they have so many contact hitting guys, how do you get through?
It's like I told you, man, you just have to get ahead on the count, try to make a good pitches, and try to get a ground ball out of it, because you know they have a small part too. And that's another thing. They know their part. It's like the dog. When you have a dog in front of his house, you know, they want to kill you, but like when they play away, it's not the same. Like, and we just have to deal with that. Like, it's nothing that we can do. Just fight.
All right. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. All right. Thank you very much, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks for talking with us.
All right, so I tried five ways from Friday to ask him how he approaches getting Tetsuto Yamada out, but he just wouldn't give away any company secrets. But anyway, what was the thing that stood out for you?
Well, first of all, I really enjoyed it because he has I love his analogies. You know, I love the bit about the home versus road analogy.
Uh-huh.
If you're in somebody's home, their dog's gonna try to kill you.
Right.
So I love that. So basically, you got to go on the road and watch out for the dogs.
Watch out for the big dogs.
That's right.
Don't let anybody let the dogs out.
Okay, stay away from Sapporo Dome when they're doing that. Okay. Now I really like that. I guess the other thing I liked was his expression about the rotation. We have a rotation. We got about nine guys.
Yeah, we got 8 or 9 guys.
and basically, a rotation can equal, well, you know, this is a rotation in terms of the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. You know, they've got nine
just
guys.
Just on a different level.
Well, all right, okay, fine. But it's essentially the same thing. Basically, we've got we've got 3 or 4 core guys, and then we've got maybe 5 or 6 other guys who take turns, who basically are activated and deactivated as according to the team's need, and they go down to the farm team and work bullpens.
Yeah, activated. Some of them are activated, yet they're still deactivated.
Yeah. Well, they're short use. You can do that in Japan because of the way that, you know, the system works here, where there's no options. Everybody's on the first team. They're just here or not.
Well, I mean, in the sense that they're activated and on the roster and sometimes on the mound, but you probably need a defibrillator to make sure.
Oh, that's a little mean, don't you think?
No, because I mean, the results they've gotten from some of these guys, I mean, it's just iffy. It's up and down. They don't know. They just throwing a guy out there to fill a spot, telling him, hey, here's a spot start for you. Here's a chance, but. I mean, we all know what's happening. I mean, Oguma, throw him out there once in a while. Sure, you're not going to get very much.
You're not going to get many rotations out of that one. No, that's not. That's probably it's that's like you can call him a rotation anchor. You know, as in throw this dead weight overboard.
Right. Shinosuke Ogasawara, the rookie, we saw him for a little while, and they sent him back down and told him to work on things. But, you know, he's going to have to work on things before we see him again.
Maybe his diction. I don't know. So,
yeah, it's quite interesting. Yes.
So, yeah, but I understand the idea. And certainly he was caught up in that vortex. So he's familiar with it. And he sort of had that down. And obviously he's been, you know, even like, you know, we talk about that with the Hawks. Rick Vandenhurk had to go through that a couple of cycles.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got deactivated twice after good starts with the first team. And then they said, well, okay, let's keep him up here for 2 games in a row.
Right.
That worked out pretty well.
2 games in a row, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so it's, again, it's unorthodox, but when you don't know what you got, or you're uncertain about what you got, or you have people like Yoshimi who have had health issues and who pretty much until today pitched well.
He pitched okay. I mean, yeah, he was fine, I would say, but he's certainly not his old self. And I don't know if we're going to see that guy again.
Not after today, perhaps not. But, you know, he's got to learn, you know, remember, this is not batting practice. You've been on the farm a lot, and this is different. So,
of course, I don't think he has ever been a good pitcher at Jingu, ever.
Ah, well, there's a lot of people who can say that. So,
yeah. I'm not going to judge him off of Jingu, but yeah, he was not good.
Yeah. So otherwise, no, I thought that was it was interesting. I thought, yeah, the bit about Yamada was interesting. And I guess the I'm working on a story about Yamada right now. So I'm asking. I haven't talked to him yet because sometimes some days he can be elusive. And then he's not terribly articulate. He doesn't like to give away too much.
Yeah, and I mean, you notice in the post-game interviews, too, on the field that he's kind of reluctant, kind of shy, kind of standoffish.
Yeah, and I think it's part of it. He's young, and part of it also, it's like, you know.
I don't need all this attention.
Exactly. You're taking away my time. I got video games to play or something, you know, so or cartoons to watch or something. So, but yeah, how do you get him out? And I think the best answer was, well, you Scott Matheson said, of course, if you hit your locations, you can get him out. But he and Mike Zagurski both said the same thing, which was if you make a mistake, he's better at hitting them than anybody. But here's the thing, as Scott said, and I'll just finish this quickly. Scott said, you know, it's a waste. He has to go to the major leagues. I had this impression Scott wouldn't mind if he was like in the major leagues next week. I'm putting words in Scott's mouth. He wouldn't say that because he's such a competitor. I think he kind of relishes the opportunity to face somebody who's really, really good. Yeah. So I don't think that was his meaning. But anyway.
So, yeah, he Jordan said that Yamada has no weaknesses and he looks for his pitch. And as soon as he said that, I always, you know, we always skewer Andrew Jones for this for this phrase that he used, the former Rakuten slugger. And, you know, who seems to be on a lifelong search and journey for his pitch. I think in this case, it's more of a case of Tetsuto knowing the pitchers and zoning in on what their best pitches are and what they're trying to do, and then sitting on those pitches. Because I've heard people say, you know, he can hit pitches in all parts of the zone. So it's not like you can consistently get him out doing something, doing the one thing. So whatever it is that you're good at, you've got to sharpen that and then bring some other tools out and try to get him out throwing pitches that are not your best pitches.
And as, you know, as both Mike Zagurski and Scott said, you know, don't miss your locations by much.
Right.
Because if you're trying to, you know, you're trying to go in, go in. Don't go kind of in.
don't go in halfway.
Don't go get kind of in or it'll get kind of out.
In a hurry. So, I mean, obviously the Dragons didn't do well this weekend. And on Friday, Jordan faced Yamada. He went 4-plus innings. And the two times that he faced Yamada, he walked him once and got him to fly out to left. So not you know, he didn't give up any hits to him. And the Dragons pretty much kept him in check until today. I want to talk about the Dragons for a little while now. I had this debate with Coaster Freak, and he said he thought the pitching was interesting with the Dragons. And I thought, well, that's a great word for it, because that's a nondescript way to say we like to watch them because we don't know what's going to happen next.
I'm guessing that Tanishige is not a big fan of that version of interesting.
I wouldn't be. I don't know what's going on. I mean, Yu Daiono has pitched well off and on. We know that he went. He had to be deactivated because of arm problems. And Shunta Wakamatsu has just been inconsistent. And, he came back and he wobbled through a game the other night. I think they ended up winning. But Raul Valdez has been okay with that funky delivery and deception that he threw. And, you know, slow stuff. He's the ultimate crafty lefty. Kazuki Yoshimi, we talked about a little while ago. He just isn't himself. We expect a little bit better for him, a little bit more consistent location, and he's just not able to do that. And then Jordan, and then there's just other guys who keep coming up and throwing. And I keep saying that everybody's in this race for the playoffs. I don't really see a team in the Central League that's basically out of the playoffs. They're all fairly close with the wins. They're all fairly close with the in the loss column, let's say. the Yakult Swallows and Hanshin Tigers have so many more losses. But if they, I mean, a four-game win streak or a three-game, you know, if they could sweep a series, that would change a lot of things in the standings for them. So
might have to change the laws of physics to allow that to happen, but
hashtag high heat.
But I felt I needed to be mean there a little bit. So,
but you know, I obviously I think the highlight of the week this past week for the Dragons was beating Hiroki Kuroda and not being the file footage forever of his 200th win.
Yeah.
And Ryosuke Hirata also, he came out in the Hero interview that night and he said, we didn't want, we love him and we think he's a great pitcher, but we didn't want to lose to him tonight and be his 200th win victory.
Please get it next week. Please get it next week.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty funny and pretty interesting on his part to say that. But this team is interesting. I think Shuhei Takahashi is probably going to come back soon. Yep. Nobumasa Fukuda.
Mm-hmm.
Has been hitting okay. Actually, he's been, I mean, here's a guy who's strictly a fastball hitter, and he's sort of like the right-handed version of Kosuke Fukudome, because if he's, I mean, all off-speed pitches, because if he's waiting for one, he could probably hit one, but he doesn't really hit him for home runs. But under no circumstances do you want to throw him a fastball for a strike. And they keep throwing Fukuda fastballs for strikes, and since he got moved up because there was a rotation going on there. We've seen everybody since Shuhei went out at third, they've been putting all kinds of people there. Nobody has been working. And finally, Fukuda started to hit a little bit with the power that people expected him to hit with. And he's been hot since coming back, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's no position for him if Shuhei Takahashi is healthy and playing well.
Yeah, it's almost like there's some, you know, you just wonder some days that they say, you know, we had a guy here who was hurt a lot, but he was pretty good when he was healthy. You remember what that guy's name is? Wow, where'd he go?
Yeah, I don't know what they do with Fukuda. I mean, you could probably keep him on the bench and maybe he can face closers who are more likely to throw fastballs. And then he can pinch hit late in some games. But, you know, he's not the guy. I don't see him replacing Shuhei once Shuhei gets back. But they've stuck in this race a lot longer than I thought they would. And I think a lot of people who picked them to finish in last place are surprised at the way they're fighting and battling. I don't think you're one of them because I don't think you picked them to finish last.
I picked Hanshin to finish last, so they're meeting my expectations.
The Dragons or the Tigers or both?
The Tigers.
Okay.
I guess the interesting thing I'm sort of looking forward to with the Dragons. I was hoping to talk to Omar Linares yesterday. Didn't happen because he seems a little shy around people who don't speak Spanish, who don't know him. Because I went up to people who do speak Spanish asking them to interpret for him, but as soon as I did, he took him aside and walked somewhere else.
Hey man, don't be interpreting this. I don't want to talk.
Exactly. Yeah,
I met him basically when he came to Japan to join the Dragons in 19 whatever year that was, 98.
As much he was a big star then and he's a bigger man now. He's sort of like the Cuban Boomer Wells right now.
Wow.
He's
a big man. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what his role. I mean, I know he's supposed to be like a hitting coach, but I don't know that he's going to help anyone else. Hopefully he can help. And hopefully for the Dragons, I mean, he can help out Diane Viciado.
His countryman.
And teach him the ways of spreading the ball around a little bit more, hitting in different situations, taking a different swing. Because we see him take some wild swings in some situations where all they need is a base hit to get a run home. Or if he's just making contact, then he's strong enough to get the ball out of the infield and get runners home from third. But he ends up striking out or hitting ground ball, really weak ground balls, trying to pull a lot. So,
what Linares actually caught my attention was what he wasn't doing, which was when Tetsuo Yamada was taking BP yesterday and he was hitting against the right-handed pitchers and you could see these launch angles and the velocity on the balls he was hitting, he really had Linares's attention. He was just sitting there behind the batters. And then when he went to face the left-handed pitcher, Masaru Sato, the batting practice pitcher, the big fat fella, he couldn't throw anything worth hitting. It was like, and Yamada was like going, he's not hitting anything. And and Mr. Linares went back to his cell phone.
Okay. Well, let's get back to the CL race, though. But I'm looking now at the Carp, and I'm seeing how they're playing, and they had a 9-0 whitewash of the Tigers tonight, and they just look pretty much unstoppable. Now, I know that's not really the case. I know that they're just peaking, and whenever I see a team do this in the middle of the season, it's my concern about that team if they're peaking early.
Okay.
Do you get that sense with the Carp?
I don't worry about teams peaking early because, A, you never know when they are peaking. I mean, I think people said that with SoftBank last year, but in fact they peaked about September. You know, they peaked when they won the pennant, when they clinched the pennant. So do I know when they're peaking? No. Do I worry about it? No. Are they firing on all cylinders? Is what you're saying is like is everybody good now? Is that what you're trying to get to? Well, like everybody's good now, and that when people all start to drop off, as happens, then they'll start losing.
That's an interesting concept that you bring up.
Yeah, well, I'm not really familiar with the concept of peaking early. I mean, people use it all the time, but I don't really know what it means.
Yeah, and I like the way you phrase that. I think. Obviously, when you look at the wins, you might think, oh, they're peaking early. Oh. But for me, it's not the winning so much as that they're going out every night and they're in games and they compete closely with the opponent. They pitch well. They're catching the ball well. And even if they don't get, let's say, a bunch of runs like they did tonight, they still come out and they have a chance to win the game late in the game. And so just because they're winning a lot of games late or they're on a hot streak or something like that, I wouldn't say peaking. But to me, right now, everyone seems to be pitching well,
mm-hmm.
and everyone seems to be hitting well. And so I'm looking at it and saying, well, can they get better? Can these guys do better than
okay,
this?
That's good. That's a good explanation.
And if they can't, then I would say, okay, well, they're peaking because this is what everybody could do. They're playing to the limits of their ability. Now, I don't think the Carp are peaking, to be honest. I think they can do more.
I think they can do more in the starting pitching.
In the starting pitching. Especially.
I think otherwise, no. I think offensively, they're not going to get any better. But on the other hand, see, this is the thing about batters is they tend to be more consistent than pitchers throughout seasons and so on. So is it a problem? Also, they don't have Brad Eldred right now.
Yes, and they don't miss him.
No, they don't. They got other guys who can play. They got like guys who are going, come on, I can do that. Come on, coach, I can do that. I know he's hitting homers. I can do that. So, yeah. The question, I guess the other part of the question is, can they maintain this? And I don't see, you know, they might drop a little offensively, but I see other areas where they can improve.
Yeah, I mean, you said that they probably can't get any better offensively, and I think, you know, they've got some holes. The catcher position could probably hit a little bit better. But I think everyone Koichi Ogata is putting on the field right now seems to be contributing somehow.
Pretty much.
And so that's why I would say, yeah, it looks like they're playing almost
maximum
capability.
I think that. I understand that. I thought that was interesting the way you put that. Okay.
Right. I mean, a lot of times we try to equate.
John. One thing, don't call him Scrappy.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, Carp is the Hiroshima Carp are a no Scrappy zone.
You hear that, Jay Jackson? No Scrappy zone. But I think a lot of times we equate success with winning, and that's important, but that's not always what happens in baseball. You can play well, and I know we've talked about this in the past. You can play well and still end up on the wrong side of the score, but that doesn't mean you played a bad game.
Sure. Happens all the time.
And so that's, you know, I don't want to get caught up in the wins and losses and say this team is good because it's winning. this team is good because it's playing at a very high level throughout the lineup, I think, and then as well as on the mound. So do these other teams, my next question for you, I got lots of questions for you, do these other teams have a chance? I mean, I said last week that basically they don't have a chance to catch the Carp because they're going to have to beat each other, or they're going to beat each other up along the way in trying to catch the Carp.
That is sort of a logical problem. You know, it's a conundrum when five teams are, you know, you got five teams on the bottom and they're trying to catch one team at the top. Is yes, they all obviously the answer is for one team to play really well, and then it's not a problem. Then those other teams will be fighting the Carp as much as they are them. But if it's, you know, if it's going to be two teams playing well, well, that's a bigger problem too. You know, I think it all depends on how often they can beat the Carp.
Right.
Because if nobody can beat them, then it's not going to matter.
Right. So I mean, I want to say I see the team, I see the Carp finishing this thing off and coming up with a championship, the first one since 1991, is it?
Yep.
And even in a playoff situation, I like their chances because I like their pitching. But let's look at some of the other teams now. The Giants won today. They beat the Bay Stars. They came from behind. I think it was 10-7.
Yep, they came from three runs down to beat the Bay Stars. Yep.
Yep, and Alex Ramirez is doing well with Rami Ball, and I like what's happening, and they've gotten some replacement guys to do some. Miyazaki's doing well in the field. That's a surprise, and I saw him make a nice play at second base as well. So I think they can stick him in the lineup where.
He doesn't look like a second baseman, but yeah.
No, he doesn't.
But I saw him at first base today. I said, oh, and they found his position.
No, that's J-Lo's position.
Except he was at third base today.
Yeah. So they, I mean, he's mixing and matching. And I said, again, not necessarily looking at the wins and losses, but they didn't pitch very well today. But all of the teams other than the Carp are still under 500.
Which happens in interleague. because of
interleague, yeah.
Exactly.
So you know, you got these teams that the Giants are one game under, the Dragons five, and also the Bay Stars five games under 500. So are they doing well if they're five games under 500?
Well, it's irrelevant because it doesn't matter how many games they are under 500. It matters how close they are to the Carp. Can somebody catch them? Yeah, obviously somebody can, because we don't know what's going to happen to the Carp, you know, in the next 3 months. But that's, you know, right now it's a case of, is their bus going to crash? Because it's getting to the point where that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a collapse of some sort or something huge,
right,
to change the way this season is going. Because right now, it's not looking good. You know, when you say the Carp are going to be in first place at the All-Star break and saying, wow, you know, the Bay Stars were in first place at the All-Star break last year. And yeah, well, at that point, the Bay Stars were a 500 team and they were, I think, 3.5 games ahead of the last place team. Yeah. So yeah, huge difference. And the Carp are playing well. And are they peaking? I don't know. But I don't think any team is out of the playoff race.
Oh, no.
As you said, but catching the Carp, that's a tough one to call right now. So I don't see it happening. Could it happen? Sure. I think there's probably, I just throw off the top of my head, there's probably about a 30% chance that one team will, you know, find something, you know, pull something out and somebody comes back and people play good who we didn't think were capable of. And things sort themselves out. So that could happen. I would think that could happen to virtually any team in this league. But is it going to happen? Most likely not.
Yeah, I mean, I find the Giants really interesting because I keep thinking, and they had their problems recently. They had a stretch where they weren't scoring very much, and they were getting, I mean, this rookie right-handed sidewinding thrower.
Right.
Aoyagi.
See, I already forgot everything. I wrote about him 2 days ago, and he's gone and forgotten.
Yeah, he shut him out on one hit over seven innings or so. I don't know. He pitched well against them. You know, they were struggling. The Giants looked really bad. They've got their rotation issues. They got offensive issues. They've got defensive issues at first base in particular. They've got base running problems. You name it. They've got problems, and yet they're the team that's closest to the carpet, one game under 500. It's really weird to me because I keep seeing them as a struggling team, and they've gone through some peaks and valleys that seem deeper, and the crevices that they fall into seem a little bit deeper and a little bit worse. They're like Ally McBeal.
Okay.
All of their problems seem like they're much worse than any of the other teams' problems.
Okay. Oh, thank you for that, because that was an analogy I needed either you or Jordan Roberto to explain to me. the Giants are a mystery because they do have this talent, and they have guys who are pretty good, and guys who are like, you know, I saw Yamaguchi pitched quite well today, which has been kind of a rare thing. And they threw Kentaro Nishimura out there, and I was talking to my colleague from Kyoto, and I said, it's like this, these two teams are competing to see who can throw out the worst pitchers they've got and still win the game. They were saying, like, we're not going to use somebody who's really good because this game might go the other way. So we'll throw a bad guy out there and see who survived. You know, it was like Russian roulette. Nishimura wasn't the answer, but Yamaguchi was, you know, and some of the Bay Stars guys pitched quite well. But then there was a weird situation because the game was completely out of control until they used five different relievers who each retired every man he faced. So I'm going, whoa, that was a weird game. But it was a weird game in many respects. The comment I want to make about the Bay Stars and their chances for the second half is that, Ramirez had one of those starts like you were talking about the Dragons rotation. You know, let's just try this guy, Yoshiguni, and see how he goes.
Kuniyoshi.
And throw Kuniyoshi out there and see how it goes. And it didn't work. And he's got good stuff, but he didn't have this. He looked nervous and tight today. And he didn't have any problem getting two outs. But I think it was almost like, you know, he got two outs and he was heading for the dugout and said, wait, there's another one. So that didn't work. But I almost every time I see something not work with the Bay Stars, I have this feeling that, okay, that's something that needs more work, and they'll address that problem and go on, you know, and they'll look for, you know, they'll go to the next problem. It seems like problem solving is what this team is about. Now, they have a lot of problems for sure, but they're taking them on and tackling them in an orderly fashion.
Yeah.
Which is not the same for most teams in NPB. So,
all right. So let's talk about the Pacific League now, including this amazing 14 game winning streak by the Fighters. And you know what's the most amazing thing about this streak, Jim?
I'm dying for you to tell me what is the most amazing thing about this streak.
A team in the Pacific League has won 14 consecutive games and they're still 5.5 games back out of first place.
Yeah. Well,
it's like they didn't even do anything.
Wow. Hold that thought for a second, because I was, you know, I was looking, I'm going to post something to my blog later tonight on Sunday night, probably. And I was thinking about that streak and how it compared, because this is the Fighters streak is the longest in NPB since the last long Fighters streak,
which was 2007. And this is equaling a club record for the Fighters. So they're really doing, they're going way beyond the realm here. And they took just about up to the last outs to get to this milestone streak today. Brandon Laird hits a solo home run in the bottom of the 12th inning. So, and they came back from 5-0, which was also pretty impressive. So,
right. So anyway, I was curious to look, you know, since you mentioned it, now the streak started on the 19th of June.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, where were they on the 18th of June?
I can remember.
Well, John can remember. Hold on.
No, I can't.
Okay.
Oryx is what I remember, but I don't think.
Okay,
that's right.
The Fighters were 11.5 games back. In third place, they were 5 games behind the Marines.
Mm.
Okay, so
flash forward to today.
And?
They're 2.5 games up on the Marines in second place. And like I said, 5.5 games back of first place, yep. SoftBank. So
pretty much if you want to beat the Hawks, you have to sneak up on them, wait for a weekend when you've got You got Takanashi Arihara and Ohtani all pitching, and then beat them over the head before they see you coming.
And get out of town and beat some other teams. And they're doing it. I mean, more power to them. This is basically what I had predicted, but obviously we've got a long way to go. This is a three-team race, it seems to me, in terms of making the playoffs. So it's just a matter of jockeying for position. And I don't know what to say. This came out of nowhere. This was the 14 games in a row. I wouldn't have thunk it. I don't think they're going to win the next game. And then the next one and the next one, all the way until Ohtani pitches again. I wouldn't pick them.
Well, this is the one I thought they would lose, to be honest.
And it made a lot of sense that they would lose this game. Well, and it looked like they were.
And yeah, well, I was thinking, you know, Ohtani has been so good for so long, you know, that his seven start winning streak, which is even more impressive, oddly enough, because a game is larger than a start. But you know how that works.
Right.
So no decisions in there. He was so good. He was really, really extremely good in six of those seven games. And I'm thinking, okay, it's time for him to have a slightly off day. Well, he had a slightly off inning, and then he had a blister. So he did have a couple of, you know, he had some rough spots today. So, which he hasn't had too many of, and that was almost all the streak needed to end.
Mm-hmm.
Until let's Tomohito fix that.
# high heat.
Well, I tell you that.
Well, Steve said it was Ito's fault. I'm good with Steve's analysis.
I don't know about that. I don't think you can mismanage a 5-run lead. Other than I thought Standridge might have been done, but they could have gotten him out a little earlier. But still,
he pitched every game.
Yeah, he was pitching great. I mean, and you got to give him. He's a veteran pitcher. You're not going to yank. Like I said before, these guys are human, and you're not going to yank him and say, well, look, I don't have any faith in you. You don't look very good. You look a little tired or something. The guy says, I feel fine. Then you got to let him pitch. So you let him pitch. So you lost the game. And they got swept. I mean, he wasn't the one who blew chances late in the game. Most of the guys he's been sending up to pinch hit, Hosoya had a chance with guys on base late in the game, and he didn't get a hit. I think he walked. Mm-hmm. But he didn't get a hit, and he took a few hacks and, didn't get it done. So, I mean, it just happens. But
it does happen.
The Marines seem to have slowed down a little bit. The Fighters obviously picking up. And, of course, we can ask the same question that we asked about the Central League. Are they peaking too early? And I think this is a case of them just winning a lot of games and not peaking. I don't even know that they're playing that great. They're just winning games.
Well, they sure have been pitching well.
Yeah.
And I'll give them that. Today was the third one-run win. So anyway, yeah. Were they really good? Well, I think their pitching was really good. Their offense was spotty. I think, they don't have Ohtani in the lineup every day, so that hurts.
And I'm
curious today why they left him out, and it might have been because of blister issues or something.
Maybe he had a blister that was developing because he'd been swinging so well. And making so much contact with the bat. Yeah.
Could be that vibration, the bad vibrations off the bat.
Anyway, okay. The Eagles, the Buffaloes, the Lions are just working on things. I think I've seen them all just start putting in a bunch of, or all three of these teams, they've been putting in a bunch of young players and giving them an opportunity to see what they can do. I've seen the Oryx Buffaloes throw in a bunch of rookies. I've seen the Lions do the same thing. I think the Eagles went early with that by bringing Okoye back up and starting to just play him every day.
Having said that, the rookie infusion has really helped Oryx. Now, they lost two out of three games during the week.
Yeah, but they won two out of three at Lions Land.
Yes, but last weekend they brought is when they started this little youth movement a week ago.
Uh-huh.
And they played pretty well in Chiba. I mean, they didn't win. And here's the thing: they're playing better with these kids than they were without them. And I liked, and this is a case of they're not winning, but you like what you see. So I did like what I saw from the Buffaloes this week. So for what that's worth. I think they're poised to make a big jump into fifth place.
Yeah. Well, when you're when there's really nothing to play for and the pressure's off, you kind of produce sometimes because you're not as tight.
That's the thing with Oryx, and we look askance at Oryx for a variety of reasons and a variety of historical incidents, and there's some of that is right and some of it's probably misguided, but you know they got issues, and I think bringing up the kids who don't, you know, who have everything to play for, you know, they've got jobs to earn,
right?
They've got you know careers to build. Never hurts Oryx because A, they've usually got good guys on the farm team.
Mm-hmm.
Who are better than they think they are.
Better than the team thinks they are.
Yes, and the Oryx first team tends to be a tar pit in the sense people get there and they get stuck. And they get stuck in roles and they sort of get used to being stuck and they don't go anywhere.
Right.
So
right.
Bringing up the kids and taking the guys who are stuck and you know putting them on the bench tends to usually work with that team. It's not a long-term solution because eventually the kids who kind of come up are going to get stuck.
Right.
So, but it sure feels good when they, you know, when they bring in the new guys. So.
Right. So yeah, the fighters are looking good, obviously, and like I said, who could have seen this coming? I certainly didn't, but these things happen. I don't think it's reflective of anything except that they figured a couple things out, and again, Sho Nakata is not producing during this whole time. He's just—it's like he went off and the team went on the switch, right. And he's just has not really been there, has not really been doing anything, and they're winning in spite of it. So,
well, one of the things I think is the switch, you know, bringing Hiroshi Takanashi out of middle relief. It's like, you know, again, it's his first time through the league as a starter, and we don't know. But it, you know, it's sort of like one of those things. It's sort of like Hayato Takagi last year as a rookie. You know, until the teams have seen him three times, they had trouble with him. And you know, we'll see how. But every time he pitches, it's fun to see, you know, how long this thing goes. It's like a winning streak. So Takahashi's been great. Takanashi's been great. Arihara's been pretty solid all year, and then they've got the Shohei Ohtani following those two guys in the rotation. So these teams facing him on the weekend, you have to wonder how often do they say, well, are we going to save our bullets for the week, for the weekdays?
Right. We don't need it for this. So they're going to play Oryx starting on Monday with a 3-game set. So that'll be fun to watch. All right. Our friend Michael Westbay did follow up on what he said he would follow up on, which was mm-hmm. the home runs that from the comment that I heard on the radio at the beginning, or I guess midway through interleague play, when the announcer just looked at the total number of Central League home runs
mm-hmm.
and the total number of Pacific League home runs and said, hey, the Central League has more home runs, so this is a power hitting league. And I'm like, what? You know, I blew up. And
John doesn't blow up. He vocalizes.
Yeah, I vocalize. Okay. with the volume very high.
Yeah, I sat next to him when he does this. Blow up is a pretty good analogy, but
thank you. So Michael took a final look at and actually compared the numbers from Interleague, so let's listen to what he had to say.
Hi, John and Jim. Michael here. I had said that I wanted to revisit the question of if the Central League had caught up with the Pacific League in terms of power once the Interleague competition was over. I've now had a chance to look at some of the numbers, and they don't look at all good for that hypothesis. This time I only looked at the totals for Interleague play for both 2015 and 2016. Surprisingly, both leagues were down in home runs, the Central League hitting 9 less than last year, going from 61 to 52, while the PL decreased by just 4, dropping from 75 to 71. If you measure power by the number of home runs, then the PL was even more dominant in 2016 than in 2015 compared to the CL. The feeling after the first half of Interleague was that there was a little more parity. But then Nippon Ham and Nakuten went to Yokohama and crushed the ball. It certainly feels like that was a big chunk of the difference this year. The other traditional indicator of power is slugging percentage. The Central League dropped just 0.002 slugging points from 2015's 400 to 398 in 2016's interleague play. That is to say, they went from 881 total bases to 794. Those of you juggling numbers in your heads can deduce that with a loss of almost 100 bases, the number of at-bats must have also dropped close to 100. And yes, you would be right. While the Pacific League dropped from 437 to 430 this year, they still have quadruple digits in total bases for both years, increasing from 1,004 to 1,031. My final verdict on the idea that the Central League has caught up with the Pacific League in terms of power? Nope, not even close. Back to you, John and Jim.
All right, so as some of you might recall, he told us before, Michael Westbay did, that he factored in park effects and other aspects, and he said that the Central League really wasn't hitting that many more home runs than the Pacific League if you really count up the real home runs, or the Sabre home runs.
Well, I think what he did was he looked at how easy home runs are to come by in the Central League. And you adjust for that.
Making the park adjustments. Yeah, well, I said, essentially, yes. I said when I heard it on the radio, I said balderdash. And I say it again today.
Did you say you actually used the word balderdash?
Well, no, not at the time. But
I just wanted to check my memory, boy. I thought that would have left a mark.
Yeah, I need to use FCC-approved language here, so.
Jumping Jehoshaphat.
So thank you, Michael, for checking the number and revisiting that topic. And, you know, just like you said, dumb radio announcers shouldn't be allowed to grab a mic and just spew off at the mouth.
Or podcast people, those of you out there who are spewing, as opposed to us.
Hashtag high heat.
I have no comment about that.
We don't spew, we vocalize.
Okay, vocalize. Okay. With a controlled volume.
Indeed. Always in control, man. It was kind of predictable. You know, when you get into interleague, I think what happens is when you go into interleague and you see the home run totals, you know, you think, you know, what Michael thought, which is, hold on a second. And I thought the same thing. We know the leagues are different, so on and so forth. But, you know, the best test is when they play each other in the same parks.
Mm.
And we saw that. And as Michael reported, it was really a technical knockout for the Pacific League.
Right.
Yep. No doubt about it. They're better hitters. They're better. Now, of course, here's the other question. And this is the question which begs to be answered. And I've tried to answer it. Is that because the Central League pitching is not as good as the Pacific League pitching, that they hit more home runs in interleague?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And my answer to that is probably yes and probably no. Part of it is because they're better hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was telling me, and I can't give the credit to this player who mentioned this. Oh, excuse me. It was Alex Ramirez. I asked him during his player days. No, it was last weekend in Yokohama. And he said, basically the Pacific League have more guys with more gas, and the Pacific League hitters are better used to adjusting to that. So when the Central League hitters see some of the Pacific League pitchers dial it up, they don't really have an easy answer for that.
Well, all I had to say is there, you know, this guy had no regard for the parks, no regard for the pitchers, and sometimes 1 + 1 isn't 2. All right, some notes. Crash and Burn Baby continues the review of the collision rule. Now the league met on Monday with all 12 teams. And wanted to clear the air about the home plate collisions. You like that? See what I did there?
Yeah. And it's a little easier to see right now.
I can see clearly now.
Oh!
The smoke is gone. So obviously they're considering changing the rules or the wording of the rules so that they don't apply the rule when there's no contact made or no collision happens. Right. All right. Great. So Tsutomu Ito, the skipper of the Lotte Marines, said if there are issues, they should be discussed at the end of the season. Why can't we go through the season and finish? I want to know what they're going to or how they're going to explain this to the fans.
Well, it says a manager who hasn't been victimized by the umpires yet.
Well, whether he has or hasn't or has benefited, at least they're showing replays. But yeah, he hasn't been victimized
by poor calls. So far, my experience so far is I've asked the managers who've benefited and the ones who've had things go the other way. And the guys who've benefited are perfectly happy with the rule as it stands.
Don't see a problem.
That's right. Works for us. That's what Yoshinobu Takahashi said. Works for me. We're good. We won that game. Yeah. If it hadn't been for the rule, we wouldn't have won that game. Right. We're good. Other people got to learn. We learned. Yeah. We're better than they are. He didn't say it, but that's how it sounded.
Yeah. And then okay. Shingo Kawabata of the Swallows said he was just concerned about more confusion among players if they go ahead and change this rule midstream. So those are some of the comments. There were others, but those are some of the comments that are coming out. I don't know what to do. I would personally, let's play the season the way the rules are worded now, but get the umpires to understand, because I keep complaining that it's too much for them to watch. They can't watch all that stuff and watch and make sure a catcher has the ball and that a tag is actually applied and all that stuff is happening. We're slowing it down. Super slow motion, super duper slow motion on TV, but those guys are trying to look at it live, and it's just too much. Right. And so I say, leave it the way it is. Just make sure they don't misapply the rules, and then review it in the off season.
Well, that was the I think, as I mentioned a couple of times, the big issue is that the umpires are allowed to make a huge judgment call about when to apply it or not. Oh, we're leaving that up to the umpires, are we? Oh, okay. So that's the biggest part of the issue. I agree with you about the umpires having too many things to look at, and we still haven't had an umpire say, oh, that's in violation of the new collision guidelines, so you are safe. Hasn't happened yet. And you know what? It ain't going to happen this entire year. So we'll see. And the other point I want to make, which is I think you're spot on about too many things to look at. Now, when you look at blown calls at first base, a large number of them are when the guy is sliding in head first. Now, Wayne Grassick and I were talking one day, and we asked Mr. Osamu Ino, former umpire, and he's on the umpiring technical committee, if it's harder to judge those calls. And he said, yes, because your eyes are trying to be in two different places at the same time. You're trying to look at the ball at eye level or, at normal level, and now you're trying to look at the guy sliding. You can't see where his body is. You look for one and then you look for the other, and sometimes in between something happens. So with the home plate collision, there are way too many things for the umpires to look at. And on top of that, they did not basically apply a solid rule for when to apply the rule or not. Now they're going to fix that by saying, if there's no collision, there's no foul.
Okay.
Well, I'm good. I'm glad that they are looking at it. I hope they retune it and fix it. I think they can. Is it going to be a lot better? No, it'll be a little better. I think the good thing about the no collision, no foul rule is that it's simple to understand.
Okay.
And that is a huge step forward.
All right, moving along, the All-Star Games, which we haven't mentioned. And I think we haven't mentioned it because you and I have probably lost that luster for All-Star Games. Because for me, I'll tell you why. It's because they have two games. And to me, it's not a Midsummer Classic. It's Midsummer Madness because you've got too many games. There should just be one. Get in, get out, and get some rest.
Let me ask you, other than the ramen and Miyazaki, what do you have an All-Star moment that you remember or you care about?
Yes, I do. Ichiro came to Nagoya Dome. I think it was the first time Nagoya Dome hosted the All-Star Game after it was built. So it was the late 90s. I don't remember what year. And
that was that's his hometown.
And that was his hometown. And he stood at the back of the center field wall against the center field wall. And he said, I'm going to throw the ball all the way to home plate. And he threw the ball past home plate all the way to the backstop from dead center at Nagoya Dome after taking a few steps. And I thought, man.
Was that in practice?
No. That was before the game.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I thought, this guy's incredible. Yeah, that was my All-Star moment.
Okay. I guess mine was 2004 when
the All-Star games were huge because they were talking about them being the last Pacific League Central League All-Star games. I mean, mind you, they weren't contests. They were giveaway games to promote the Pacific League by all the players of the other of the 12 teams working in concert against the owners. Atsuya Furuta to this day denies, waving in Shinjo, telling him he could steal home plate when it was fairly obvious that that's what he was doing.
So the games are Friday night at Fukuoka Dome, Fukuoka Yahoo Dome.
Yep, Dome.
Yahooku Dome, whatever they call it, and on Saturday at Yokohama Stadium. So have fun. I'll be watching.
Yeah. So anyway, do you have any? Is there anything particular about this All Star game that interests you or not?
No, not really.
Okay. Nobody
get hurt.
Yeah. Good for that. We did have some news today. Speaking of the All Star games, that Shohei Ohtani, who was probably a sure bet. When they announced tomorrow who's going to be in the home run derbies because they had a fan vote, probably ain't going to play because of a blister. He burst. So probably no All-Star game. They certainly don't want to risk him for the All-Star game. And that means NPB will require him to miss games after the All-Star game, to which Nippon Ham is like, yeah, fine with us. We want him healthy. We're not going to... You know, in 1999, they forced – basically, the Bay Stars were leaned upon to get Kazuhiro Sasaki into the All-Star game when his arm was hurting and he could barely pitch.
Right.
And it basically screwed up his return to the team for months.
Mm.
He was not happy to go. He didn't want to go. It didn't make any sense except, oh, we have to do this. It's for the fans. This was in the pre-strike days. So that was that's, you know, what the All-Star games really shouldn't be about. But, yeah, good to hear the fighters are interested in sticking to their guns there. And this year I was surprised by how well the fan vote and the player vote lined up.
Okay.
They're very close. So that was interesting. And I guess the other one is that Takumi Kuriyama.
Of the Lions.
1,500 career hits. Why is this his first All-Star game?
Yeah, because he hasn't really been a standout player. He's been a steady guy more than a
He's been a steady guy in a steady guy like, you know, 18 home runs, 6 triples, 40 doubles, 70 walks. You know, every year he's like the leader in a, you know, and he'd steal, you know, used to steal 18, 20 bases a year, but he was never a, you know, useless base stealing leadoff man like Yasuyuki Kataoka, who's played in some All-Star games.
Okay. All right. Well, it happens.
Yeah, it does. There's guys who are really, really good, but don't catch people's eye because they're good at everything.
Okay. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, this week our question is from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo, and he says, I had a couple of quick questions for you both that I was wondering if you had any insider insight on.
Insider insight, I like that.
Insider insight. So he says, what has Nelson Perez of the Tigers done to offend the call-up gods of Hanshin? He's hitting well on the farm, and everyone else seems to be getting a shot at the first squad. Why not him? Jim?
Well, this question is he inside or out of sight? And I think with the case with Perez is, yes, he has hit well on the farm team. But no, there's a lot of guys who have hit well on the Tigers farm team. And he plays first base, which means Mauro Gomez is an established player. They're really – I think right now the Tigers are saying, we're going to give Mauro Gomez about 120 shots from Sunday to prove he can't play in NPB anymore. And when that happens, or he breaks a leg, whichever comes first, then Perez will be playing.
Yeah, and I looked at his stats. I haven't seen any of the games on, you know, Paul League TV. And I thought, okay, well, he's only got 6 home runs, so maybe that's the problem. And I talked to Jim before we started recording. He said, that's okay. That's fairly okay for the ballparks that he plays in. And then I said, he's got 42 games. You know, 309 is a good average, but he's only slugging 483. I don't know. Maybe it's the glove. I don't know what the glove looks like. I haven't seen him play. And I just have to believe that the glove, I mean, obviously they signed him from independent league last year, and he hit, but you've got to do more than that to be a first team player.
You do, especially with some teams. Although, as we've talked about, the Tigers have been very open-minded this year. But my guess is it may be an issue with Mr. Kakefu, who's the farm team manager, because basically Kakefu's got a little plan down there. He's taking guys up, sending them up to the first team. And if we haven't seen this guy, Kakefu's been pretty good. He's been sending guys and they've been ready. Right. I don't want to cast any aspersions on his ability to pick out guys who are ready to play on the first team, but that may be an issue. He does, if he has it, Kakefu might not see it, or Kakefu, he doesn't have it, and that's why Kakefu doesn't see it.
Yeah,
or personal issues.
Something. But yeah, the thing to remember is he's going to be 29 in November, so he's 28.
It tells you that he doesn't have a big future.
The guys who are playing in front of him are much younger.
Yeah, 22, 23, 24 are the guys who are getting called up. So I'm guessing that's part of Mr. Kakefu's plan as well.
So keep that in mind. All right, so the second question is, with all the talk of the resurgent carp in the Central League, I wondered what your take was on the job Mitsuru Manaka is doing, taking the Swallows from first to last, or the Oryx manager, Junichi Fukuda, in taking the Buffaloes from a 433 winning percentage to a 366 winning percentage, and still heading south. So I want to go first on this one.
Go ahead. Take your best shot.
Take my best shot. All right, as for Manaka, no Virginia, there is no Santa Claus. And Santa Claus came last year, and he delivered him a bunch of great pitchers, or pitching performances, a bunch of great hitting performances, and a championship. Santa Claus left town.
So there was a Santa Claus last year, but Christmas doesn't come twice in Jingu?
No, I'm not saying it doesn't come twice in Jingu. I'm just saying those presents got taken away. The Tony Barnett present, gone. And the guys who have tried to fill the void are not filling the void. So I'm not going to blame him for a team that's not the same. I said at the beginning of the season that we're going to be able to watch this bullpen and keep an eye on it and see if it was going to do the same as it did last year. And
I was comprehending the truth.
Okay. And I don't think you can compare the bullpens just because Barnett is gone and you couldn't slide everybody down a notch and there was nobody to fill in. I don't think that's fair, so I'm not going to say that that's the problem, because we just haven't seen efficiency in the rotation. Ryan Ogawa hasn't had that knack for missing bases like he usually does. Recently they've had to call up guys like Shohei Tateyama and Yoshinori Sato. They had to bring them in to get starts. They got a good start from Yoshihisa Nadase, but I don't know if they knew what to expect. So it's not the same team that he was managing last year. They're not getting the same performances. They would have stuck with Judy Hata, the rookie. But he had a torn muscle in his shoulder, of all places. I've never even heard of that. He's injured. They just had so many issues they've had to deal with. Plus, players are not performing the way they did last year. I don't think it's a case of him being a great manager last year or a poor manager this year. I think it's a problem with the players.
I think that's probably true. I think some things obviously have been better. But yes, the health on the field has not. Last year they were pretty darn healthy, and except for Vladimir Ballantyne, and he's been healthy this year. So you know, actually, it's kind of a wash in terms of the offense. And not surprisingly, they're not leading the Central League in runs, but they're not far behind the Carp. Well, you know, as Michael would say, there's a park adjustment to be made there, and he would be correct. But having said that, their offense is a good one, and they are in tune with the good hitters. The thing has been, as John pointed out, the starting pitching, and I would say that now I haven't looked at it yet, but I don't get this sense the Swallows are all that far behind from where they were this time a year ago.
In terms of what?
In terms of their team performances. They were basically a second half team last year, so I'm not I'm not quite, you know, I'm really, this is a team I'm really, like the Bay Stars, I'm really eager to see how they do in the second half.
Okay. All right. And as for Fukuda, I think he sits in the dugout and he watches his players screw the pooch on a nightly basis. And he
can't say that.
He doesn't know what to do. He's got no foresight. I don't think he's got that much of a game plan. He just kind of sits there and watches the players just go through the motions. I think
that's harsh, but I think, yeah, but as far as a managing game plan, in terms of a, you know, I think in a baseball game plan, he has ideas, but I think now we're talking about management skills.
Yeah, I mean, numerous times.
I don't think he has the sort of, well, you know, this person's going to need this. This team needs this. We need to be working on this. And, you know, we need to manage these people. That I don't see it. Having said that, I have been told by my very knowledgeable colleague, Kyoto colleague, who covers the Buffaloes, that the players really, really love Fukuda, and he's a wonderful guy, and I was a big fan of his as a player. I guess that shows a little bit when I talk about him. But yeah, I don't know if he actually has the management, administrative sort of, you know, I'm learning this job.
Yeah, numerous times I've seen their players like not get the sign from the third base coach and have to walk over to the third base coach and have a talk with them. And I don't know what's going on there. It just doesn't look right. But I did read somewhere that they want more of this next year and that they're going to bring him back. And that's what the talk is, that he's supposed to come back next year. So I don't even know what's going on in Oryx. I'm just gonna leave that place alone and pick them to finish last from here for the next 5 years. I don't know what to do.
Wow, stuck in the tar pit.
All right, thank you very much, Glenn, for the question. Anyone else who has a question, send it by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can tweet us at High Heat, at JBW Podcast, and you can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening. Bye.